The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by heading over to bedroombattlefields.com/spork, that's S-P-O-R-K, and turn your tabletop into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included. Brought to you by bedroombattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. In the tabletop miniature wargaming hobby, an imagination is a fictional country, army, or faction invented by a hobbyist and usually set in a real historical period, but detached from actual history. Rather than recreating a real nation's army, a hobbyist creates an imaginary state with its own flags, uniforms, heraldry, rulers, and often a whimsical or satirical backstory, and then builds, paints, and games with miniature armies representing it. I found that definition of imagination's wargaming and thought it would lead us nicely into this conversation with Mark, who hosted an Imagination's Gaming Day earlier this month in Newbury. So here he is now to tell us all about it.
It's probably knocking on the door like 7 years or so that I've been back in the hobby. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I was just looking around at other things that people were doing, especially looking at blogs from wargamers, you know, so most of whom were a bit older than me, but doing things that were just kind of just a bit different and sort of like on the back of the old hammer thing, but then also drifting into seeing stuff that people were doing that was really, really like proper old school wargaming stuff, like, you know, from the 50s and the 60s. And they were sort of doing that in revival and kind of bringing it back. And the thing that I really kind of liked about it is there was a lot of this appetite for doing, you know, what some people call imagination stuff. So taking a kind of historical flavored setup and set of miniatures and telling a story with, you know, made up names of these little micronations normally duking it out. So very much like the sort of background setting in things like The Prisoner of Zenda with Ruritania, and having these kind of imaginary settings and worlds to kind of allow people, I suppose, that flexibility to do whatever they wanted. And there was a bit of that going on. I was thinking, that's pretty cool. I can imagine doing something with that. Because I think the idea of doing something straight up historical perhaps wasn't something I was kind of immediately into, but the idea of that kind of adjacent way of doing it felt pretty interesting and accessible. And what I really liked about it was just the very nature of the fact that because it's made up and it's all imaginary, it's kind of anything goes in terms of how you want to run the game and what you might want to do and so on. So that was kind of there as a bit of a seed. And then alongside that, I'd always had an interest in sort of a passing interest in the sort of kind of cool sort of Victorian sci-fi, slightly steampunky sort of stuff that always kind of interested me, especially, I say steampunk, but more like, you know, classic Jules Verne and things like that. So those things were there bubbling away in my mind. And then I watched, probably for about the fourth or fifth time I'd watched it, but the Studio Ghibli Howl's Moving Castle adaptation, in which there's kind of this, which is something that's not really in the novel so much, but something that's quite prominent in the film is all these soldiers and this war going on and these airships. And I was just thinking, yeah, this is kind of what I want to base it all on. So it was all those different ingredients all coming together in a bit of an opportunity to think, yeah, this is kind of crystallizing some of the ideas for me. Meanwhile, Alan and Michael Perry Miniatures, they had put in together a range of Franco-Prussian War figures. So the Franco-Prussian War was in like 1871 or something like that. And there was French and Prussian figures they were releasing, plastic ones. And the French ones look absolutely the same as the way that in the Studio Ghibli film, the troops of the country Ingri, where it's set, look like. And it's kind of set at that sort of late 19th century time. Although there is a magic and there's sort of steam inventions and so on. So it felt like it was all these things coming together. And so I started buying up these boxes of Perry miniatures, then started looking at other things from the 19th century and like, oh, I'll have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, anything with bright colored, colorful uniforms and so on. So I put together all this army. It was two armies, really, about 450 figures, something like that. Painted those up in about 2024, a couple of years ago. And then since that point, haven't really had a huge amount of gaming opportunity with them. Done some solo stuff with it. Played a couple of games with a friend of mine who was, you know, not really a gamer, but a bit interested in it, more from the storytelling point of view. And that's been good, but he's since not really been available to play because of work and different things changing in his life. And so a few months ago, I just put out on the Discord, yeah, does anyone want to play this game? And if you do, I'll get a venue, I'll bring all the stuff, I'll host it. And the response was really positive. Loads of people come back and say, yeah, that looks pretty good. And we were able to arrange and carve out a date. So this Sunday just gone, we did that. We actually held it very close to where Jason lived, because actually the people who were interested, most of them were in the south of England. So that was ideal for people to get to. It was a lovely sunny day. Jason hired this really lovely Victorian village hall. And it was just, it all really worked. And it was a really great day. We had six players on the day, or seven as well, because Johnny, one of the players, brought his daughter with him, which was lovely. But it just all kind of came together. And actually, for me, from that origin point of just those few ideas meddling around in my mind, thinking that could be fun, it was really nice to sort of see it come to fruition and so forth. And it's kind of getting me thinking about going a bit full circle and writing some kind of blog post or some article about it, because it's those blogs and those articles that inspired me to do it in the first place. But yeah, it was great.
Great stuff. Yeah, and I've recorded an episode with Henry Hyde.
Oh, fantastic. He's a massive proponent. Yeah. I know he's a massive fan of Charles Grant, one of the very sort of forefathers of wargaming. And I think that Charles Grant stuff, that's very much rooted in that. So there's these sort of two imaginary nations, sort of a red army and a blue army that he did, that he used as his kind of like, when he was setting out his rules to illustrate how the rules work. But yeah, Henry's really carried that on. And actually Henry's two big books, the Compendium and the War Games Campaigns books, have been really inspirational to me as well for it. I mean, Henry's like super into it, but yeah, the stuff he's done is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of the day that you put on, like you mentioned Johnny Watson's daughter, and I just, before we got on here, I just watched the video he'd put up, done a really good video of the day. He posted it in the Discord. So I'll definitely put that in the show notes for the listener too. That was a great wee peek into everything that sort of went on.
Yeah, one thing I quite liked about, I didn't realise he was filming it, but I did a little sort of story sort of introduction to it. And what's strange is I was planning on giving a little bit of context and then just getting into the game. But my main thoughts as I was driving there was that, oh, I need to explain the rules and so on. But because Johnny brought his daughter along, I sort of like instantly slipped into a kind of mode, as I would have done when my kids were younger, of sort of thinking, or almost like kind of a bit of a sort of role play, let's tell the story kind of a mode. And actually, I think that that's something that people have commented that they liked. They liked knowing what the story of the game was, and sort of like taking that out of my mind and putting it into people's minds, so they felt like they knew what they were playing for. I think that really added something to it. It wasn't something I was really planning to do. So actually, Johnny having his daughter there really inspired me to sort of go, oh, how would a kid want to know about it? Why they'd want to know, why are we doing this, rather than all the technicalities and, oh, how is it plus two for this or minus one for that modifier? They just want to know, what are we doing and why? So that was great that she came along. And I'm really glad that John has put that bit in the video, because, well, it's a bit embarrassing. I quite like the fact that that was a moment that I think probably made it a little bit of a different kind of a day, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like she was the only kid in the room. You had the Jason Ed there as well. So I see them sitting captivated.
I think that we were all kids for the day. It felt really nice, actually, in that respect. And actually, Rob Dean put a comment on the Discord the other day saying, oh, it's great to see a load of people playing such old school wargaming, and all of you look considerably younger than me. But actually, it felt very sort of timeless and ageless in terms of a way of playing a game, which I think was something that it worked really well, because, you know, we had from Johnny's daughter up to Martin, who's, you know, retired, and he joined in, and it felt like everyone was kind of on the same page, which is lovely.
Talk us through then, like, the game. And, you know, I've seen bits and pieces on the Discord about people commenting on particular little fun mechanics and stuff like that. So what actually was going on the table, and how did you kind of work it all?
Yeah, so what I did is I chose to use, as a sort of set of rules, it's called Rebels and Patriots. It's by Daniel Mersey and Michael Leck, and it's in the same series as the Rampant games, Dragon Rampant, Lion Rampant, and so on. It uses very similar mechanics to those games, but it's designed and aimed at, like, 19th century America, War of Independence, Civil War, that kind of era. But the reality is, it's really universal, and it worked well for what I was doing, and it was kind of appropriate period. You know, it wasn't too futuristic or too archaic. It kind of hit that sort of 19th century vibe well. So I used that as a set of rules, but mainly because it's quite light and quite easy. But I did some different things in terms of actually setting the game up. So when people came in, I gave them a little briefing, and then I handed out little cards. And on those cards was an officer's name, and a flag for which side they were on, and also a special ability sort of trait thing that they got that they could maybe use once per game, like a little bonus or a buff. But then I sent them off to go to tables, and on the tables I'd set up the units that I'd brought. So although there is a point system in the game, and you can, like, very much like, say, Hobgoblin or whatever it might be, it's a kind of archetypes type unit building thing. So you go, I'll have a unit of shock infantry, and I'll make them veteran, and there you go, that's the points. But I'd already done all that kind of stuff, and I basically point sort of roughly using the point system tried to make them all, each unit, kind of about equal. So there were some units of cavalry, there were some units of different types of artillery, some units of various infantry, all on the table. And it was just, each player was told, right, game one, you can have 5 units each. So some people just chose, I think, because they just, oh, I like the red ones, I'll have the red ones. And there was an appropriate unit card to go with each one. So those unit cards were really quite useful, actually, because they condensed the rules into a sort of format that they could just have as a quick reference for that unit. And it also made the draft sort of almost like a draft, if you like. So people were just going up to the table and just choosing. I think some people made quite arbitrary decisions, and some people made different decisions based on, like, what they liked. One thing that was quite cool is on the team that Ed was on, which was the defending team, the Ingeri team, one of their deployment rules for the first game, which he didn't realize at the time, was any light infantry or skirmishers can deploy later in the game and kind of come on, pop out of places, pop out of buildings, pop out of woods, whatever it might be. So Ed decided, oh, do you know what? I'll have all of those units. And he played in that way where he could kind of deploy them as he wanted, while meanwhile, Johnny and Jason were deployed at the start of the game. So that was really nice. It was really emergent, and it didn't seem too complicated. So the rules were there. I gave everyone quick reference sheets, but and I didn't play myself, so I was able to kind of guide people through it and so on. Martin, who joined us as well, has got some familiarity with those rampant rules. I know he's, you know, he's obviously a big DBA player, and he knows his stuff inside out. So it was great having him on board, because he was really good at, like, picking up, oh, are you sure on this? Are you sure on that? And so forth. And the first few turns we did it where it was quite sequential. So we had sort of 3 players on the side. So we go 1, 2, 3. Okay, that turn over, and then the next team, 1, 2, 3. But then after a couple of turns, it started becoming more continuous, where people would go, well, I'll do mine now. People picking up the rules and getting clarity on that. But I mean, meanwhile, we've dropped a few rules, we forgot a few things, but nothing consequential. And actually, it rattled along really nicely. And what happened is we managed to get through 2 games in an afternoon. So we started about 1, and we wrapped up by about 5:45. And we got 2 full games done, and it worked really well. So from that perspective, the actual kind of mechanisms and the rules that propelled the day were good, but enough that I thought, yeah, that will work well. And then in terms of the kind of quirky things, they were introduced in game 2. So unfortunately, Johnny and his daughter didn't get to see some of these, because they stayed for the first game but then had to head back. But in game 2, we brought in some extra stuff. So on the Ingeri side, they had access to some magic, and they could cast some spells. And on the Strangian side, which were the attackers, they had access to these Ingenuity cards that gave them certain benefits and bonuses, including parachuting troops in, aerial bombardment, so an airship flying overhead and firing down below, and also some rules where there was a steam tank that was introduced that was a kind of piece of emergent technology that was quite powerful but quite vulnerable too. And it was great because everyone used those. We didn't really get any spells cast because I came up with this very complicated way of casting the spells, which didn't prevent them, but it was more that I think I just made it a bit too difficult to get the spells off in terms of the target numbers. But all of that stuff, I think, added quite a lot of flavor. But what people quite enjoyed is it was all introduced, like they didn't know those things were going to be available. So, for example, with the aerial, airborne troops with the parachute, it was just said, you can drop two troops in by parachute and then ask the umpire and they'll explain how to do it. So at the point that Stuart decided he wanted to do that, I then gave him a piece of paper with some templates on and a pair of scissors, and he had to cut out things. So you know that you can make like little whirligig paper helicopters that fall like sycamore seeds. So the idea was he had to make those, throw them on the table, and they whirled down and landed where they did. And it was really good because people really enjoyed that kind of slightly chaotic, slightly emergent gameplay. And I think that it was, they were nice surprises that I had sort of in store. But another thing that was great is I phoned David in Chicago last week, just a few days before, and said, can I go through these things with you? I really want to talk to someone who wasn't going to be there on the day just to see, what do you reckon? Do you think it would work? And he was great because he really gave me some good suggestions. And I think it was really nice to see that pay off, that surprise element that I think that maybe war games are quite, you've got these big heavy books and you've got all the rules, you've got all this information. And it was actually really nice to have, it wasn't just the rolls of the dice. There was also a lot of elements that people perhaps didn't expect. But by being the games master, I was able to control those and introduce them. And yeah, I think that they went down really well, actually. I was really happy with it.
Did the biscuits go down well?
The biscuits did go down well. I think biscuits always go down well. But I bought some malted milk biscuits with the cow on them, which just have that. And this is something very cozy about them all. And all the terrain was really nice. Jason brought his green, goblin green Games Workshop mats, the ones that are like static grass on a sort of vinyl cloth, and we've got all these windmills and little farms, and they all look very cutesy and nice bright coloured characters. So it was absolutely not grim dark, but the malted milks were definitely on brand. And yeah, the biscuits always win.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the sort of colours and vibrancy as well, I think that's what you said attracts you to. I know it's not a period as such, but you know, that kind of 19th century uniform where it was like, we want to be seen and shot rather than who wants to hide and survive.
Yeah, it was really nice actually to see all the stuff out on the table and see the bright colors, because I think that it didn't look realistic, it didn't look diorama like, but what it did look is it looked really evocative and it looked really fun. And I think that building little worlds and creating little kind of playscapes is something that's, you know, it's inherently kind of calls back to being quite young, and it had that sort of shiny toy soldier vibe about it. And I was really pleased with that, actually, just to see, like you say, the red coats and the Zouaves in their bright colored fezzes and their billowing like pantaloons, and you know, it's all very over the top, very pomp and ceremony, and it really kind of, yeah, it really set it off. I think it's I know that Henry Hyde's big into that kind of, like, you know, all his stuff, he has these really lovely old school Spencer Smith 30mm figures with the tricorn hats and properly gloss varnished and green bases, and I actually really like that vibe. I really like the realism as well that people have in their wargaming, but yeah, it was just something about it that felt really, really old school and really kind of warm. And it was really nice doing it on a sunny day as well. I know that sounds silly, but everything looked really good as a result.
Yeah, you were almost H.G. Wells out in the garden doing Little Wars. Probably got the weather for that. Maybe hire a bowling team next year.
Well, I mean, it's interestingly, it was the week after Jeff over at Oakbound had his The Woods in the Woods event.
Yeah, that looked brilliant.
Which I've never been to, but I'd like to. And it just looks amazing. It's just like, if you're going to play a game about little fey creatures out in the woods. Actually, do it in the woods. It's perfect. And yeah, you're right. That H.G. Wells thing, that's the next step, isn't it? We've got to do an actual a garden game.
Yeah.
I think it also made me think about how stuff like, you know, there's little old cannons that you could put matchsticks in and pull them back and fire them out. And
yeah,
that type of stuff. It's like, do you know what? That's pretty cool. And certainly that's the like, Battlemasters vibe, isn't it? You know, the sort of practical... it's crossbows and catapults, isn't
yeah,
it?
With the, yeah.
With the practical thing. But it's just something about that type of wargaming. It's, I really like the sort of warm fuzziness of it.
Parsec's Diary is an audio journal bonus series on Patreon, chronicling the adventures of my 5 Parsecs from home crew, the Lucky Strikes. Follow this beleaguered gang of criminal scum as they're pursued around the galaxy by lethal cyborgs, xenomorphs, and budget ale-inspired bounty hunters. Parsec's Diary is available now on patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now, back to the show. It must have been a pretty big painting project for you.
It was, but weirdly, it didn't take that long. So I got most of it done in about 6 months, which sounds crazy in terms of actual numbers of models. But what I did is a really simple approach. So just, there's no highlights or anything like that. It's just a few base colours and then a really light army painter wash. But the mass effect of it is really good. If you look at each figure, they're not that crisp at all. They're quite basic. But I multi-based everything. So there's 6 figures on a sort of 50 by 60 mil square base or rectangular base. So they're quite packed in. And that's got 2 advantages. One, it's not that much stuff to carry. But also, it just really looks kind of like you just see the unit rather than the individual characters. So it was a biggest job. It's kind of strange because I've got more stuff to paint that I want to do, but I think I had that run 2 years ago where I got loads done, and I think 2 years ago was the year that we didn't have such insanely hot summer for whatever reason. And I just was using the mornings when it was light just to paint. So getting up early and just painting before I got to work. And I got through loads by doing that, you know, just sort of 30 minutes every single morning. And that's kind of how I cracked it. But after the end of it, I kind of burnt myself out a bit, really. And then the next year I did all my wood elves and stuff. So that was great. But again, yeah. And I've really slumped in my painting the last few months. But I'm kind of saying to myself, there's no point in worrying about that. Like I've got years left and I haven't got any space. So buying more stuff is a terrible idea. I just need to kind of get through and paint what I've got. But that day, running it on Sunday, it's made me go, do you know what? We can do loads with this. So we had 2 scenarios that worked really well, quite simple ones. One was just to kind of go and get some objectives, scout the locations type one, very ordinary, but it worked well. And the other one was a cross the bridge type one. So it was a river down the middle, and then the attackers had to get a unit across the bridge. So they weren't complicated, but there was still the multiplayer effect and all, you know, you get that thing with multiplayer games anyway, where people are asking each other questions, doubting whether they should do stuff. There's loads of emergent play that just comes out of it being, several people. Plus, I think the other side of it is it was just really nice just to spend the afternoon just chatting and just kind of spending time together. And when Jason's running this big Bring Out Your Dead knockoff tribute, whatever you want to call it, in the start of April, start of August. That's what I'm mainly looking forward to, is just going there and just catching up with people. And yeah, there were some new people who came along to the event on Sunday, other people I'd met before. It's just really nice just to kind of, you know, just start to really form these sort of really deep friendships with these people that we've met through your community and the adjacent communities. And I never would have met them before. And yeah, there might only be 25 people who actually want to play games like this in the whole world. But if 6 of them can come down and meet up on one day, then I'm happy as Larry.
What was the response like from the folks that went?
Really good, actually. I asked for some feedback, and actually people have been really complimentary about a couple of things. People really enjoyed those sort of emergent things, and they enjoyed how they were kind of... They described something that I wanted to achieve, that I did think quite hard about, was making sure they got drip-fed the rules in a way that was manageable and they understood what they were doing and they didn't get too much cognitive load. And I think that worked well. So I think people liked the tables with the armies on, and they could go and choose what they wanted, the units. But it also meant they could have a little team talk together, because they had the big village hall and they could do that at either end. That was good. I think the other thing that people really liked was the right balance of a sort of historically plausible scenarios. You know, they weren't crazy and full of chaos, but there was enough little bits of fun in things in there, like the magic or whatever it might be, just to introduce those fun elements. I think that everyone got on really well, which is lovely, but in testament to how everyone conducted themselves. But also I think that was the other thing, it was a great bit of feedback, is people actually just really enjoyed the day out. And like Johnny's daughter, for example, really, really liked it. And, you know, actually, not everyone would. And I think the reason she enjoyed it was because he was really involving her, which is great. But also just like everyone treated her really high levels of respect. You know, it's like, it was really nice to have her there. I think we were all delighted that someone brought their child along. So that it felt really properly inclusive in a really genuine way, which was great.
Will it be next up for you, the Boyle Gets event that you talked about there?
Yeah, so that's the next thing I'm going to, which I'm really looking forward to. So it's only about 3 weeks away or something like that, which I'm sure Jason's absolutely panicking because he's got to make loads of stuff, loads of terrain. He's actually, you gave me a sneak peek preview, or I saw one today on his little WhatsApp group that he's got for his local club. And yeah, it's looking ace, properly ace. It's Dr. Spork, Dwarven Fortress being embedded into the side of, I think he's not done it 28 mil scale. I think he's actually done it 1:1 scale, and he's built a mountain in his shed. I think he's probably going to have to remove his shed to remove the mountain and get one of those police escorts to drive it up to Nottingham where they have to drive over the centre of the roundabout. I think that's probably what's happened, but it looked properly ace. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. And it's just also, like, I don't know how many people we've got coming, but it's something like knocking on the door 20 or something, which is really good. So, yeah, that'd be really nice to catch up with people. It's at the same venue that Johnny Watson held his Call of the Crown Games Day at. That was the last bigger thing that I went to. And so, yeah, it feels like doing loads at the moment with gaming and meeting up with people and stuff like that. It's been great. Ace. And there's a Xenos Rampant game day going on near me at the end of August that I'm looking forward to going to. I think Martin's coming up to that as well. It's someone that Martin knows in Coventry is running that one. So I'm cock-a-hoop with loads of stuff to do. I'm more than happy.
Yeah, you're getting out there, getting games, but that's what it's all about. Like, especially when you've went through that period of prep and loads of painting and stuff, it's nice to be able to kind of smell the roses with it all and just roll some dice, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. It really is true. I think the other thing as well is, not to say that like when my kids were younger, it was I couldn't do stuff, but it was less easy. And actually, I'm kind of really reaping the benefit of the fact that like they are now a bit older. And yes, on one hand, they now don't want to play games with me when they did before. So I don't get that game time at home as much as I used to. But like, it's easier to kind of go out and about and do things. But yeah, that preparation and seeing stuff come together, it's really nice. And it's a really strong antidote to the kind of dopamine-driven instant gratification culture that even if you don't want to be part of it, the world is so engineered to be that way at the moment, it's really hard to avoid it. And just to do some real life actual things is really lovely. And you just find yourself, you know, your phones are away, the conversations are real and genuine, and people just taking time just to do something that's really practical and really old school and really real. But, you know, not in some kind of weird pseudo nostalgia thing where you're like, oh yeah, let's pretend for a while the world isn't as it is. It's actually more like, no, this is actually how it can be. You know, that you can have hobbies that are like this, that are practical and analog, and they have a real place in the real world. And actually the digital connection and connectivity from, whether you call it social media or however you want to label it, you know, these online communities, they are like the enzyme that's making it all happen. So it's kind of this best of both worlds thing, actually. You've got that online connectivity, but then resulting in that analog experience. And it, for me, it's incredibly rich.
Speaking of the online side of things, any plans yet for the next Royal Orc session on the Discord?
So we run them quarterly. So the last one was the middle of June. So the next one will be in the middle of September. What we didn't do the last one, it was nice. It was just a kind of casual catch up. It was one of the days where it was like 40 degrees or something insane. So everyone was a bit frazzled. So it was good, but it was just a kind of chat. But the September one, it'd be really nice to do something. So if anyone's got any ideas, like a game they could run, we've done, like David did a Warhammer characters matchup. Ed's done a dungeon crawl. I did a nightmare choose your own adventure book thing. So we've done quizzes. Anyone's got something they want to run, just drop a line on the Discord and we'll do it. Because any idea, Jason did a terrain challenge thing this time last year. So yeah, if anyone's got any ideas, get in touch. It'll be the middle of September. And anyone who's new to the Discord or new to the community or never been on one of the Royal Orc things, it's just a very light casual catch up, 7 till 9 o'clock UK time, one evening in the week, mid-September. And they work really well. And it's really nice just to get to know people. They've been really good as well in advance of live events. We'll have some photos from the Boyle Git thing as well that we can share as well, which would be nice.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.